I am your host. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and not with me today is Bede, because he doesn't answer his phone to do a podcast. So I do have I was going to say a replacement, but she's not really a replacement because she's part of the Super Marcy family. So with me is Miss B Harper. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all for this fine Mother's Day. Oh, was Mother's Day yesterday for us? Yes, it was.
It was. Well, every day should be Mother's Day because our mothers are awesome. Well, mine is awesome anyway.
Oh, my mother's awesome too.
I'm sure a lot of mothers are awesome, and if you don't think so, I think Mr. T will tell you otherwise, because he really loves his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He even wrote a song about it, which we are not going to play on the podcast.
Aww.
Sorry to disappoint everyone.
Well, yes. It just about ruins my night.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, so we are back once again, and it has been a little while between podcasts, which is my fault because things are always unpredictable, but hopefully we will have some kind of schedule happening and things should hopefully get a bit more regular, and with any luck, the wrestling podcast will be coming soon as well, so should be good. And for this podcast, we are going to discuss 90s horror movies because it is 90s horror movie month at supermarcy.com. Yay! I don't know if anybody else likes the 90s for horror movies as much as I do, but I don't think it was as bad a decade for the genre as people make it out to be, because I found that there is quite a lot of, you know, good movies, decent movies out there from the 90s. So it just seemed like a good theme to have for the month. So I picked it and everyone just has to do what I say. Yeah. Yes, so we're going to talk about some select few 90s horror movies, ones that will not be covered on the site in a live tweet session or a review or whatever we choose to do, because there's quite a lot of movies and we just can't cover them all, so what can you
there's
do?
There's only so many days in a month, folks.
Yeah, and I'm doing the best I can to cover, like, what I can, so yeah, we'll talk about some that haven't been featured on the site for the month. So I think that's a pretty good topic for discussion. And then we might go over just some of the other things that we've seen or been reading lately that doesn't relate to the 90s horror theme.
It doesn't have to. It could, but
yeah. Anyway, since Bede is not here, I can't ask him why he's a terrible Australian, but I'm assuming it's because he's watched the Roland Emmerich Godzilla movie, and he's going around saying that he doesn't think the new Godzilla movie will be any good because it doesn't have Matthew Broderick.
And that's why he's not my friend, ladies and gentlemen. That is that.
Yeah. So I think that pretty much sums up his terribleness in his absence, and I'm sure he will want to slap me when he sees me for saying that.
Isn't it a shame that we're bashing him and he's not here to defend himself? Yeah. It's so terrible.
But he knows it's all in good fun.
Mostly.
Yes. So let's kick off. Our topic for discussion with, I do have like all these, windows open or tabs open, with all the movies from horror movies from the 90s. So I couldn't find like what I was actually thinking about. This is how bad I am. I'm like, I've lost my brain. So
your brain went for a walkabout down the block.
It did. Yeah, so the first first movie I wanted to talk about, which I've worked out, was the one that I had mentioned earlier. I wanted to bring up Bride of Reanimator because everyone knows that the original Reanimator is like my favorite horror movie ever, and it is like in my top five favorite movies ever. So the sequel isn't as good, and it replaces the director, Stuart Gordon, with the film's producer, Brian Yuzna. I'm probably saying that completely wrong.
I think it's Yuzna.
Yuzna, I don't know. I pronounce things wrong. So, so this film takes place, I think it's like a few months after the events of Reanimator, even though it was like made, you know, 5 years later.
Little differences.
For some reason in this movie, Herbert West is like not in jail, and Dan Cain is still working beside him, and they are both still played by Jeffrey Combs and Bruce Abbott. So basically, I think they go back to Miskatonic University Hospital. And Dr. West, I don't know how he's a doctor, but
why hasn't he had his license
revoked? I don't know. But they basically, he's still doing his experiments with reanimation, and he starts like reanimating body parts on their own. So basically, because it's called Bride of Reanimator, he's making a woman out of body parts. And he makes, I just have to bring it up, at some point in the movie he makes this like finger eyeball thing that walks around, and it's really silly.
It's something you have to see, folks.
Yeah, really, and for some reason, Dr. Carl Hill's head returns with wings, which is really weird. But this is kind of like, you know, a takeoff of like Bride of Frankenstein, obviously. And it's just, it's actually like a really fun movie. There's no way you can take it seriously. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. The first time I saw it, I had a lot of fun with it. I didn't really know what I was expecting from a sequel, but it's fun and it's always good to revisit. It kind of amps up the comedy a lot as well, which is really funny. A lot of stuff like makes no sense, which just I think adds to the fun of the movie. Like, why is Herbert West a doctor? Why is Dan Cain still with him? Why are they still at the hospital? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So yeah, that's Bride of Reanimator in the best way I can describe it, which was terrible.
Well, I think one of the best things about movies is that it's not necessarily something that you can describe in detail, and that's why you should encourage people to, you know, go and watch it for themselves. It is such a ridiculous movie, but it's got a sense of humor. As you said, it doesn't take itself seriously whatsoever, yeah. So that's why it's so funny. It knows it's dumb.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can see, like, how much fun Jeffrey Combs had with the role. And it's
He would play Herbert West for a free sandwich, I betcha. He totally would.
Yeah, you can see, like, he just loves the character. And I just brag. Yeah, I totally met him last year and we held hands. Oh, yeah.
And he proposed to her as well.
Yes. Yes, yeah, so if I somehow die, he's going to reanimate me.
Sweet.
Yeah, wait, what? yeah. Okay, so, yeah. I love Bride of Reanimator. It is, you know, it's a film that really, it feels like an early 90s horror movie. Even though it was kind of made, like, I think towards the end of the 80s, really early into 1990, it just feels like that kind of movie. And you can look back on it and just really, like, feel the vibe of, you know, saying goodbye to the 80s and saying hello to the 90s, which is what I like about some of the early 90s horror films, because you can really see that things are starting to change with the landscape of films.
Mm-hmm.
Better make sense? Yeah. So I would give it like 4 out of 5 because that's how much I like it. Go me. Go me. I don't know. What would you rate it if you have to give it a rating?
I would give it a 3 out of 5. As you said, it's not as good as the first one, but, you know, you really can't top a film such as Reanimator. But I think Brian Yuzna did a respectable job. His heart was in the right place, and I don't think anybody in that movie thought it was a chore to be in. And yeah. That's what counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought I was going to fall off my chair. Whoops. All right, Sue, is there a movie that you would like to bring up for discussion?
Actually, on the subject of Brian Yuzna, I would have to say that his film Society is one of my favourite 90s horror films, because it is just so grotesque, but at the same time, it really does have a message to say. It's got a valid observation about, you know, the world as it was back in the day, and for that matter, how it still is. Basically, yeah. It's about a class separation and rich taking advantage of the poor. It's disgusting. It's over the top, but it has an intelligent message going for it, and that's why I like it so much. If you've seen the final scene involving the shunting, as they call it, you don't feel like you're gonna really vomit, but it's just one of those scenes you just go, oh my god, but you still keep on watching it because it's just so watchable.
Yeah, you can't take your eyes off. I think it's so, like, it's got this obvious message, but then it, like, gives it to you in such a visual way where the rich are feeding off the poor.
Literally. And
it is such, like, a fuck you to the upper class. Its message is, like, still so freaking relevant today, which is why it makes such an interesting rewatch now. And it is actually a really fun movie. It's totally gross.
And that's why we love it.
Yeah, it actually wasn't as gross as I was expecting when I finally watched it. But, yeah, it's really good. And I think it's Screaming Mad George who did the practical effects. I mean, that guy's a champ.
But if you got Screaming Mad George and Rob Bottin in the same room, imagine the magic they'd be able to make. Just think about it, folks.
Just think about it. I don't know.
So, yeah, I definitely give it, like, 4.5 out of 5. Just some of the stuff does come across as a little bit dated, but you can't help that.
No,
I think also it's just, as you said, it's a great message, as in saying, you know, fuck you to the higher class, because I'm sure all of us can relate to that. Yeah. You know, those who aren't living in a mansion, who have a enormous trust fund or something, you know, it really does speak to you on that level.
Yeah, and as I said in my Lawnmower Man review, I mean, as soon as a movie is made, it's automatically dated.
Precisely.
You know, you can't really say, oh, it's just so dated. Well, every single movie is dated. It is. Movies are a look into when they were made, what ideas were happening at the time, what, you know, people were thinking. And I think people just don't, like, it doesn't, what's the right way to say it? That doesn't occur to people a lot of the time. And I think that people really should think about it when they watch an older movie. Don't think, oh, it's dated, the effects are so crap. Well, hello, you're watching a movie from, say, 1985, yeah. At the time, the effects were great, but obviously things have come a long way, so you need to look at it as a glimpse into how things were then.
Mm-hmm. That's like saying, you know, a movie like Gone with the Wind doesn't have, like, state-of-the-art, like, effects that we do these days. Well, of course they didn't. It was, like, back in the 30s. You know, they were making it on their own sort of, on their own budget, using their own sort of knowledge. And I still think they hold up perfectly fine.
Mm. So I hate when people say something is dated because I feel like slapping them sometimes.
I think we've all been there. Just try not to go to jail over it.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to be, like, in any sort of order with the movies that we're going to talk about. So I will bring up Brain Dead, a.k.a. Dead Alive, from Peter Jackson. And if you, I mean, one year we did a Halloween commentary for the movie, which was hilarious. But yeah, I love this movie a lot. And I wish Peter Jackson would go back to making movies like Brain Dead.
Me too. I want him to get back into the horror scene so badly because he's brilliant at it.
He really is. He, much like with Stuart Gordon with Reanimator, he knows exactly how to blend the horror comedy and get the tones right. And it's so disgusting, but it's so hilarious, and it's just so much fun. Like, I mean, trying to describe this movie to someone who hasn't seen it, and I've done that before, I think it was on a podcast once. I'm like, oh yeah, the movie starts off with a rat monkey, and they're like, what's a rat monkey?
A what?
Like, yeah, someone gets bitten by a rat monkey.
And it all goes to shit.
He ends up in the zoo, and then he bites Lionel, the main character's mother, and she starts, like, turning into a zombie. And it just gets more awesome. And then there's, like, a zombie baby.
And you thought the Dawn of the Dead remake did that first. Nuh-uh.
No, and this zombie baby is, like, hilarious.
It's a little shit, that's what it is.
And he takes him to the park. It's, like, one of the best scenes. Oh, God, I love this movie. And this has, a kung fu fighting priest who kicks ass for the Lord.
Hell yeah.
God, this movie. There's, like, hilarious, like, dialogue and scenes. Like, this guy's pissing on the grave and he's like, you're pissing on my dead mother or something.
That movie is so non-PC, and that's what makes it so wonderful. It doesn't care. It really doesn't.
No, and in the middle of it all, like, with the main character of Lionel, he's, like, caught up in a romance with Paquita, I can't say her name. And, yeah, so it might be this, like, splatterfest horror comedy, but it has a love story in it. Mm-hmm. And, let me take a breath. This movie is one of those movies that just sells why, like, practical effects. And same with, like, the two movies we were just talking about. I'd gone blank for a second. Society of Bride of Reanimator. Like, why it looks so good and it looks real. Like, when he's got that old school lawnmower and he's just, like, killing zombies with it, it looks fucking real and it's disgusting and it's awesome. But I mean, unless you have, like, the most advanced CG ever, you can't really get that. And, you know, you can really tell when, like, there's CGI blood and stuff. So I'm definitely always going to be in the practical effects, you know, corner. Is there anything else we can say about this movie? Because it's just awesome and funny.
Oh, once again, it really has to be seen in order to be believed.
Yeah.
You're really doing yourself a disservice if you are a horror fan and you have not seen this. It is absolutely compulsory viewing.
Yeah, and see the, like, uncut version because it's awesome. Yeah. So this is, like, 5 out of 5, hands down. What about for you? Is it 5 out of 5?
Yes, 5 out of 5 because it's just sheer ingenuity. Mm. It really is.
Yes. So what movie would you like to bring up?
Well, on the topic of gore and love, Cemetery Man. Now, that is a movie, again, that you must witness in order to fully comprehend, because I don't think I can really give a detailed synopsis that can justify the film. It's really something that the viewer must see for themselves.
I discovered this not last year, the year before, thanks to a suggestion from my friend Anthony O'Connor. He was like, you have to check out some of the movies by, God, I'm probably going to pronounce the director's name wrong, Michele Soavi. It's probably completely wrong. And Cemetery Man is based on a novel from the same guy that ended up creating Dylan Dog. And that character was kind of based on the look of Rupert Everett from this movie. And, yeah, the films of the director, whose name I probably butchered, are amazing, but I think this one would be my favourite. And it's just such an awesome movie. It's visually, like, amazing. And it's hard to talk about it. Like, I don't want to ruin anything. How do we, like, I guess, like, Rupert Everett, if you can believe his character's name is Francesco, which just seems weird.
Francesco
della morte, which means of the dead. I'm Italian, I should know these things. So he's a cemetery caretaker. I think, because it's been a while since I've seen it, the deceased come back to life after a week in the cemetery. So yeah, that happens. I think we'll leave it at that, because it's like, I don't want to like ruin anything.
Do you know what else happens? Rupert Everett nailing Anna Felci on a gravestone.
Oh geez, and that's a hot scene. Yes. I wasn't going to bring it up, but, you know.
Oh, well, here you go.
Yes. Yeah, if you want to see a hot scene, that takes the cake.
Yeah, have a slice of that.
Yeah.
But on the reels, it really is a very good movie. Very stylish, very deep, philosophical even. And, absolutely. You know, just, and it's very funny as well.
Yes.
Very funny.
Very dark. Although I butchered, like, describing it. But, you know, I'm Marcy. That's what happens.
That's what you get. That's what you get with Marcy.
But, yeah, this is just a fantastic movie. I'll definitely have to, you know, give it a rewatch sometime soon. Because it's just so good. And again, I would, without hesitation, 5 stars easy.
Yeah, 5 stars here. One of my favorites, personally.
I think it needs like a really awesome Blu-ray. I think there's one in Italy, but yeah, who knows if that even has English on it.
Well, here's hoping.
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, like, fucking watch this movie. It's so good. Sorry, I kind of took over that from you. All right, so another one that I think we can both agree is a bloody awesome movie, and you've probably heard it mentioned on this podcast before, but you know what? It's that fucking good. We'll talk about it anytime we want.
Do what I want.
Yeah, so The Ugly, the New Zealand horror movie, and apparently we have some love for New Zealand horror movies.
Yeah.
In this podcast.
Indeed.
Yeah, so don't write New Zealand off, man.
The Kiwis know how to do it.
They do. This is an awesome movie, and I do have to thank the terrible one for introducing me to it, which I hate to admit, but he did.
Tisk tisk.
It is about, it takes place in this, like, insane asylum. I think it's for the criminally insane. And Simon Cartwright, played by Paolo Rotondo, he is a serial killer, and he's getting, like, evaluated by a psychiatrist. Someone, I think he asked for her directly. I can't remember. So he kind of, like, tells her the story of, like, what he's been through, how he was, like, bullied and abused by his mother. And then, like, how I think he kills his mother, and then, like, he talks about how he kills, and he, like, doesn't have, like, a specific type, and he says that the ugly will make him do it. And so, yeah, it's this really, like, interesting and intense movie, and it will leave you guessing until the end, and then you'll just be shocked by the end. And this really left me, like, stunned. This is, like, filmmaking and horror, like, filmmaking at its best. And I think you would agree with that.
Mm. What I liked about it was definitely the suspense factor, and the fact that the killer is more or less telling the story. Therefore, you're not quite sure what he's saying is true or not.
Yeah, it's like that you can't trust the narrator. And I think what makes the character of Simon, like, really interesting is not only is he, like, extremely good-looking, you really feel sorry for him. There's a lot of sympathy, and, like, you really question whether or not you should be feeling sympathy for somebody who's killed so many people.
It really does make you, it makes you think twice before casting the character into the white or the black, because he's given, you know, sorry to say this, but, like, many shades of grey rather than just 50 of them. I'm sorry, that was a low blow. But, yeah. Oh, God, low blow, woo! All right, what was I saying? Oh, yes. Yeah, the, what they did with Simon, in terms of making him the antagonist as well as the protagonist of sorts. When a film can make you sort of question what is right and what is wrong, that's when you know it's working.
Yeah.
That's like when that's like with Downfall, with Bruno Ganz, who played Adolf Hitler in that movie. I mean, we all, you know, Hitler was a monster for what the shit he did, but the way the film portrayed the more human aspects of who this man was, it really makes you take a step back and sort of, you know, balance your judgments a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the times you don't, I mean, this is a big reason why I find, like, true crime and stuff so interesting, is that there is a person behind that monster. And this is a really good example of that. Yeah. I'm just thinking, is there anything else to say? No.
Other than see it.
Yeah, pretty much. What about you? What other one would you like to talk about?
Well, there is a certain little movie that not many people have probably seen. It's got Winona Ryder and Gary Oldman, Anthony Hopkins, Keanu Reeves. I don't know who they are. Bram Stoker's Dracula. I remember when that movie first came out back in 1992, I was at the cinema and I saw the picture of the wolf creature's head that you saw in the poster. And I was like, oh, what's that? And I never actually saw the movie until much later. And that was when I was, like, really getting to the whole sort of Dracula thing and actually reading the book. One evening, I was watching Bram Stoker's Dracula for the first time in full on a particularly windy night. And as soon as, you know, Dracula shows up to, you know, do his thing, like, some wind blew down a bowl of potpourri from my air conditioner and smashed it over the floor. I was like, it's a sign! It's a sign!
But Gary Oldman was coming in and you were like, oh, yeah.
Oh, hormones! I am ready!
Yeah.
But anyway, like, here's the thing. When I saw the movie, you know, back as a teenager, of course I thought it was, like, the best thing ever. But as time has gone on, I've come to sort of, like, you know, break it down and sort of analyze it as a result of, you know, me being into film and that sort of thing.
Mm.
It's not a perfect movie, but Francis Ford Coppola really made do with his resources.
Mm.
And I think that movie brought American Zotro back from the bridge of bankruptcy at that point. So Bram Stoker's Dracula really did a lot for, you know, not just film, but a whole lot of people in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, and I think what makes this, like, a really interesting movie is that it is quite epic. It goes through a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in it. That's not what I was going for, but,
stuff and things.
You know, there's a lot to it. It's not, like, a short movie. It really, like, tries to develop a lot of things. Mm. And Gary Oldman absolutely just owns the movie. Like,
yeah.
He's so good. Even with that, like, ridiculous, like, makeup. But then, you know, like, he goes with the, he's like, hello, I'm going to be sexy with my John Lennon sunglasses and my top hat.
And my pimp suit.
Yeah, it's like, hello.
Hi, I forgot my name.
Yeah, that role made me into a woman.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do think Bram Stoker's Dracula is a deeply sort of flawed movie, but when you weigh the negatives with the positives, I think the good things really do work in the film's favour in the end. It's not the most accurate Dracula adaptation, but I have long since given up on expecting a faithful translation. It's just not going to happen. I really don't think so.
But, yeah, it is a really, like, it's a good movie. It's fun. Keanu Reeves is pretty dreadful in it.
Oh, Keanu Reeves is an English accent? Oh, I know where the bastard sleeps. So shut up. Shut up, Ted.
Yeah, I mean, what you know, he was, like, trying, but it wasn't going to work.
No. I mean, it was honourable that Coppola wanted to, you know, put younger female bums in seats, but if you have Gary Oldman in that role, I really don't think you need Ted Theodore Logan.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, I can't remember, like, what I wanted to bring up because I have no memory.
That is the power of Gary Oldman, ladies and gentlemen.
Gary Oldman just ruined me. But, actually, there is something I would like to bring up. I don't know if I'll actually get to review it or not, but this was a movie that, when it came out, I was obsessed. I loved it a lot. And I was kind of into the whole, like, I don't know, possession-y type thing at the time, and that would be Stigmata with Patricia Arquette and Gabriel Byrne in priest mode. Hello.
That's the trigger, people.
But this movie kind of came out at a time where I was, like, really questioning my own, like, religious beliefs being brought up, you know, in Catholic school and to, you know, be a good Catholic, which I never really was. So it was interesting. I strangely enough, I went and saw this with my dad at the cinema. For some reason, we both find this kind of thing fascinating. Like, my dad told me when The Exorcist came out, he went and saw it with the town priest. So, yeah.
No shit.
I'm like, wow, really? So, yeah, I guess we both kind of, like, had this interest in it for whatever reason. It's not like we're really religious. But I thought it just brought up a lot of interesting points. It's not as good now as it was back then. I mean, you can really tell it was directed by somebody who had a background in music video.
Definitely.
But I think it has a lot of, like, really interesting ideas. And Patricia Arquette gets, like, possessed, and we later learn, like, why she's possessed, and why she's suffering from what's known as the stigmata, which is the wounds of Christ that he received during crucifixion. And yeah, it's like an interesting mystery. I think the performances are pretty good. And yeah, I think it's like worth revisiting every so often. It's something that I do like. And I think it offers some interesting like points about, religion and, you know, what the church says versus what's actually happening. And I think this film was actually banned in Italy, where the Vatican is, for the religious elements, which I find interesting. And yeah, Gabriel Byrne as a priest. God, that's hot. Just had to get that off my chest.
Would you like a glass of water, darling?
Yes.
A cold shower.
And one of the, like, best things about the movie was the soundtrack. And the music was by the one and only Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I still listen to some of the soundtrack from time to time because it's still pretty damn good. This would probably be, like, maybe 3.5 rating. I don't know if you've seen it or if you liked it.
I have seen Stigmata, but it was only once. I wanted to see it back in the cinema, but I didn't even get around to it. So I waited until it came on DVD, and, you know what, to be perfectly honest, I don't remember too much about it. I do remember, you know, when Patricia Arquette is, you know, acting possessed and, you know, the her hands and feet are bleeding. But that's as much as I can remember, so I can't really give an accurate rating, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, if you've only seen it once and it was ages ago, it's really hard to remember.
It was a very, very long time ago.
Yeah, because this was like a 1998 release, I think. I think we've almost covered everything. Is there any other movies you wanted to bring up?
Yes. Okay. Have you seen the film that is known as Ravenous?
It has actually been a while.
Has it?
Yes, which is why I planned on rewatching it, and I was either going to review it or do a live tweet session. But it's been such a long time. And I remember, like, the thing I remember most about this is seeing the trailers on videos. And I was like, wow, this looks so intense. And it's got Guy Pearce and Rob Carlyle. And that's basically...
Full Monty.
Yeah, and that's, like, and it dealt with, like, cannibalism. And that's what resonated with me the most was the trailers made it look so badass. And it's been such a long time since I actually saw it, which is why I'm excited to go back and watch it and, yeah, review it or live tweet it, whatever floats my boat.
Yeah, I gotta say, the whole cannibalism angle is what also attracted me, because cannibalism is, like, one of the most taboo things, well, in Western society, anyway. I can't speak for any other culture or ethnicity, but when you think of the things that, you know, people just say, you know, shit, stay away from that. That's just not cool.
I think,
you know, cannibalism is one of them.
It's a subject that was really big in the 70s, like Cannibal Holocaust and all that. But then, I don't know, I guess that interest kind of died down and then resurfaced a little bit.
But also, this movie takes part during the Mexican-American War.
Mm.
You know, all these violent events, you know, a wider sort of mushroom cloud of the whole thing with cannibalism. It's like one violent act upon another, you know. Back in those days, it was just, you know, dog eat dog, you know, pardon the pun. But, yeah, it was a really good time to, like, set a film like this and deal with such a sensitive, you know, and, dare I say, frightening subject.
Mm.
And it's also quite funny in places. It's like a black comedy, actually.
Yeah, I think it's, like, had got that, like, black comedy label. And wasn't this, like, around the same time as, like, Cannibal the Musical?
From I believe
the South Park guy.
There you go.
Which is weird. There's not much I can say about it until I revisit it, but I'm excited.
Mm. It is definitely one of those oddities that comes around. Mm. Immediately, you don't necessarily think, oh, that's something I must see. But when you sit down and watch it, it's like, oh, why did I not discover this earlier?
Mm. Yeah, and it's funny that the trailer really resonated with me, because that's what, like, VHS was all about, was watching the trailers.
Mm.
And it was
so much
fun.
Yeah, those were the days, wasn't it? Those were the days.
They were. I think we'll wrap it up maybe with one more movie each. I've got, like, hiccups or something.
It's Gary Oldman again. Tell us to stop doing that.
I did want to bring up The Stand. And the reason why, like, when I was still at Arrow in the Head and I was doing Dissecting the Director, and I picked Mick Garris, and I know that Mick Garris and Stephen King are pretty good friends because they've done a lot of work together, and I think that Garris, like, really fits in with King's style, like, what he sees his work as being on the screen. And I think that The Stand is, like, the perfect example of that. And I think it's definitely, like, one of the better miniseries of Stephen King book. But it's strangely, like, really entertaining. And even watching it, like, you know, 20 years on, it's really, like, interesting. And it does flow really well. It does feel a little bit long at times, but other parts just flow through, like, really, really well. And I think that a lot of it's to do with, like, a really, really strong cast, like Gary Sinise, and just a really bizarre and interesting storyline as well. And I've got to remember names here. I think it's Jamie Sheridan played, like, this devilish character. And I'm more familiar with him from, like, Law and Order or Homeland. So seeing him, like, with this, like, long hair in this role was, like, really cool. But a lot of interesting people show up in the movie. And I know it was, like, this really, like, big deal at the time. But I do think it's, like, worth revisiting from time to time, because it is one of the better adaptations, and just, it's an interesting experience. I think it's a good idea to kind of watch it in, it's not all in one sitting, but break it up into two parts. Like, I think, I don't know if it was in two parts on TV, because I don't really remember, but I think that's a really good way to watch it. And I've given away nothing, because you should just watch it.
Or else read the book if you don't want to watch the thing.
I mean, I've never read the book. There's a lot of Stephen King I haven't read. This is one of the ones I haven't read. But, I enjoyed it. I would say maybe 3.5 to 4 out of 5.
Yeah, that's pretty much along the line that I would rate it. Mm. I remember as I was telling Marcy before we came online, when we were talking about The Stand, the thing I remember most was actually seeing the trailers on television.
Mm.
Because back in 1994, you didn't have, well, I'm not saying it's not the first miniseries ever, but it got a lot of publicity.
Yeah,
a lot of people talking. And
those things were like a big deal on TV, like miniseries.
Precisely. Mm. And like, what is an adaptation of like an epic horror story by a well-known author like Stephen King?
Mm.
That really demands a lot of attention and a lot of, you know, it gets money into pockets, basically. It gets up those ratings and everything. So yeah, what I remember most from the trailers is like the ghastly silhouette of Randall Flagg with his horns and long straggly hair. That is what I remember the most from it. In terms of the actual sort of miniseries slash film, whatever you want to call it itself, yeah, it's not great, but it's one of the better Stephen King adaptations, and that is saying something because quite a few of Stephen King's things are quite shitty.
Yeah, I mean, Tommyknockers is dreadful.
Oh God! Did you ever see the Nostalgia Critic commentary on that?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. It's bad. It's really bad. It's hard to watch bad. And I think like Stephen King wrote that book like at a time where he was like fucking just off his nuts.
He was off his tits, basically.
Yeah,
he didn't know his ass from his elbow.
Yeah, basically. So it makes sense that, like, the book didn't really make sense. The miniseries doesn't really make sense. Yeah. But there's one more I might just quickly mention, another Stephen King adaptation, but this one is by George Romero, and I do think that pairing was pretty interesting. The Dark Half with Timothy Hutton. This is a really, really good movie. I haven't seen it for a little while. I haven't seen it since I did my thing for George Romero for Arrow in the Head back in the day. But I thought this was, like, really, really good. It's hard to explain because it's got a lot of like stuff to it, but yeah, it's just something I would really recommend. It is about 2 hours, but it doesn't feel that long. And I haven't actually read like the novel, but after watching the film, I'm definitely interested in you know, maybe reading it at some point. So yeah, that's the other one I wanted to bring up.
Awesome.
Awesome. So what about you? What's any last ones you want to bring up?
Well, there is this J-horror film that was released way back in 1993 called Dark Waters. Not to be confused with Dark Water, but Dark Waters. Mm. And it's got a sort of a Lovecraftian sort of approach to it because it covers the subject of evil nuns and the convent and that sort of thing.
My favourite subject.
Indeed. And, but while it may not necessarily be, jump out of your seat, you know, poo your pants sort of scary, it's got a really great atmosphere to it. It's full of dread, it's foreboding, and there's a sort of feverish sensation of madness that runs beneath it. And if you can find it, please give it a watch because it's one of those films that slips under the radar, which is really a shame because this director, Mariano Bynal, like, after he made this film, he just kind of slipped into obscurity. And it really is a shame because he really had a fantastic vision and execution for the movie. So please, please, if you find it, check it out. You'll be glad you did.
I haven't heard of that one. Sounds interesting.
Very.
As I said, my favourite subject.
Yeah, but the way they handle the whole sort of convent thing, it isn't done, you know, gratuitously. Mm. It's done with class, okay. And that's why I really liked it. It had some sort of some taste and sensibility in how it tackled the subject matter.
Okay. I'll have to try and find it at some point.
Yeah, dig that up. You'll be very, very happy.
Yeah. So, yeah, that sort of wraps up the 90s horror portion of the podcast. Of course, check the site because we'll have live tweet sessions, reviews. We're still in, you know, we're in the middle of the month, so there's lots to come. And at the moment, I mean, you can read B's, like, Twitter thingy of John Carpenter's vampires. I did a live tweet session of Candyman, and Tony Todd liked some of my tweets. And what else? Like, I reviewed The Lomo Man, my Body Snatchers, which is my first viewing of that movie. Those tweets are up. My tweets of In the Mouth of Madness are coming up, or they might already be up when this is online. So, yeah, there'll be lots of cool stuff. And we'll just wrap it up with a little of what have we seen lately? So, yeah, I saw Bad Neighbours, as it's known here, but otherwise known as Neighbours, starring Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, and I really liked it. It's a really funny movie, and it's got lots of Zac Efron without a shirt on. So, yeah, that was pretty good. I've got a review on the website. So
that's what you really think, Martin.
I know, right? I mean, that was really funny. I didn't think, like, the trailers gave away too much of it. Some people thought it did, but you know what, I had a good time, so yeah. I also saw Chef, which is the latest movie from Jon Favreau, and I just found out that one of my sister's good friends was actually, I think, a producer on the movie. I have to look it up properly, but it's a really, really enjoyable movie. It's a great one for the foodies. There's lots of, like, amazing food in it. I was, like, drooling every time I saw, like, some pork meat on the screen. I was like, ugh. I was doing the Homer Simpson. But, yeah, it's a good movie about a father and son relationship, about life. It's just a good movie. Yeah, then I've been watching the 90s horror stuff. And, yeah, slowly making my way through some books. I'm probably about two-thirds of the way through A Time to Kill. And I'm thinking of maybe doing a write-up with that and rewatching the movie, because I really like both a lot. And I'm still reading The Wolf of Wall Street very slowly. and still reading The Woman in Black, which you gave me as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a bit of the stuff that I've been up to. And what about yourself?
Well, other than doing the whole sort of study thing, I had the pleasure of watching the pilot for Penny Dreadful last night, which is the new show on Showtime on cable. If the rest of the season starts off as strongly as, you know, the very first episode, I think we're in for a really good time, because there's just so much potential in this show. And it covers, you know, Victorian horror, which is something I love, as well as Jack the Ripper. And I'm sort of like an armchair ripperologist. I haven't got my certificate yet, but I'm working on that. It's just a fascinating and potentially unsettling show. So here's hoping it keeps on going stronger. And here's hoping also it isn't cancelled for a second season like they did with NBC's Dracula. That sucks.
Yeah, I did share that on your Facebook because I'm a bit disappointed for you.
I think the show may not have started off as strongly, but towards the end, when it started to get all those plot ends together and that sort of thing, it really turned into something very compelling. And I was like, yes, oh, I hope a second season comes up. I hope a second season comes up. There will be no second season. Oh, fuck it.
Hopefully Penny Dreadful doesn't get canned and it builds up to be a good show. I'll hopefully be able to watch it This week, I'm so slack with TV shows. I got to catch up on, like, Hannibal season 2, Bates Motel season 2, Game of Thrones season 2.
You've got some catching up to do.
I'm on Once Upon a Time season 2. I won't say anything else about that.
No, of course not.
Yes. So, on that note, I think that's a wrap. Hopefully, we'll be back really, really soon. So, yeah, keep an eye out for future podcasts. You can find us at superpodcast.com. You can find us on the Book of Face under facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast. You can follow me on Twitter and see my tweet my live tweet sessions of movies at twitter.com/supermarcy. Hopefully you'll be seeing some more of my reviews at morehorror.com as well. I'll bring that up. Let me see. You can find B at twitter.com/DA_boomcat with a K.
Mm-hmm.
Got that right?
That's it.
And you can find B on Facebook if you look for her. And she also is on Adventure Amigos. Is it just adventureamigos.com or is it .net?
.net.
I get confused.
So do I, actually.
Yeah, so, yeah, give the site some love. And until next time, I've been laughing over the zombie baby from Brain Dead. This is so funny. And B has been a Penny Dreadful. Boom tish. I don't know.
It's getting late. We're both tired.
Yeah. So, yeah. until next time. I've been Marcy, B's been B, and catch
and
you later.
We love you.
Yes, we do. Catch you later, everybody.
Bye.
And now here is an advertisement from one of our fellow Oz podcasters.
Do you like chimps? Do you like anger? Do you like it when chimps are angry? Well, listen to the Angry Chimp Show. There's some simian-themed humor in there. Listen! Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, or at libsyn.com.
I am your host,